Bathrooms Piers Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, 2 hours, 6 to 8. Stay with us. With special guest, Train Hopper Lee.
Susie bites policeman. If she can, she will select a sergeant or a chief inspector. Oh, she's choosy. They all know Susie down at the station. When they hear she's on the prowl, there's consternation, as they know that when Susie sinks her teeth into their uniforms and flesh, she won't let go. She won't let go, 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 she won't let go. It's as if it is her mission to bite policemen. It's not so much the wounds the copper's mind as the affront to their position. The psychiatrist's report, they stress on how distraught her parents were and how respectably she'd been brought up. You're not a criminal, not wicked, just confused, he said, and laid a hand upon her arm and took a look inside her head. We are your friends, and I assure you that we understand you better than you understand yourself, and with your cooperation we can cure you. Susie looks around as if for somewhere she can hide. I enjoy a good bite, she says defiantly. Of course you do, he says, and writes it down. And that's exactly what, if you'll cooperate, we mean to cure when we've succeeded in uncovering just what you do it for. We are your friends, you can speak openly. But of course, to allow you to go round taking bites out of members of the force could lead to anarchy. Susie looks around, but there is nowhere she can hide. It's the uniform, she says, does something to me. And again he notes it down as he probes further in her brain, and is suddenly surprised to find his eyes have taken in how perfectly her teeth are formed. And how she'd look quite pretty if she smiled, and how her eyes are green. Then he explains as to a child that without the uniform they couldn't do their job. That's what I mean, she says, that's what I mean. And in her head a child screams, and in her head a spider spreads its threads like worms to catch and cobweb all her waking dreams. Come along now, Susie, give a smile for Daddy. You could look so pretty if you only try. Won't you make me happy when you grow up to be Daddy's lovely lady, every man's dream bride? Susie bites policeman. If she can, she will select a sergeant or a chief inspector. Oh, she's choosy. They all know Susie down at the station. When they hear she's on the prowl, there's consternation, because they know that when Susie sinks her teeth into their uniforms and flesh, she won't let go. She won't let go, 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 she won't let go. It's as if it is her mission to bite policemen. It's not so much the wounds the copper's mind as the affront to their position. Susie watches from behind a screen, which means her mind is out of reach of the man whose brain is trained to find out, and whose reason is as sharp as a dissecting knife to slice away the core of craziness and lead her back to life. For your own good, please believe me, if you persist in being obstinate, you'll leave us with no choice but to have you locked away, and that would grieve me. Susie, in her hiding place, keeps silent as a stone. And then she hears him say, what will become of you? His dream is to wake her from her dream, And so he tells her that these pills are what the treatment now requires to help her exercise control over her fears and her desires for your own good. You need society, for when we're trapped in our fantasies, we may think we can fly instead of learning to adapt to the reality. Susie, in her hiding place, holds silence like a stone as she sees his shadow grow to tower over her. And still he tries to break the spell, and still the words flow on as she sees him rise to giant size between her and the sun. And when he reaches out to steal her soul, she sinks her perfect teeth into his arm. How can he ever know? She doesn't mean him any harm. As in her eyes he dwindles down to baby size. She won't let go, he yells, she won't let go. Still in her head a child screams, and in her head the spider spreads its threads like words to catch and cobweb all her waking dreams.
And that was Leon Russellson, English satirist, great singer. I'm going to be hearing some more of him in the next couple hours singing Susie. But right now, we have a real live individual here in the studio with us, quite a treat. I last ran into him at the Buttery. I'm not sure if he was nabbing croissants on the sly or just enjoying a cup of coffee. This is Lee, who's with us. Lee is a man who's written one of the thickest, fattest, most interesting fanzines I've seen on train hopping, on life using the rails free. It's called Hobos from Hell, and here's one of Hell's First Citizens. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Robert. It's nice to be here. Actually, I don't write the zine. I just edit it. It's mostly other people that send in stories, photos, images, and I just put the whole thing together.
But you probably ride the rails, eh?
I ride the rails a lot.
And you just rode into town. I notice your leg has taken a bump for the worse. But this wasn't falling off a train at 60. It was something else, right?
I'd like to say it was, but no, I just stepped into a ditch on the side of the road 5 days ago and broke my ankle.
Great. Well, anyway, condolences and sympathies can be phoned in to our Free Radio Santa Cruz studio talk line, 423-5361. You're tuned, as I said before, that long song, to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which is a show that concerns itself twice weekly with civil rights in Santa Cruz and often in other cities as well, particularly as it pertains to folks on the streets, folks who are sleeping out, folks who are in parts of the counterculture, people who are being kicked around often, or just trying to live their lives and end up being inappropriate targets of surveillance and action by police authorities, or by discrimination by merchants, or what have you. But there's another side to that. I don't think, have you been discriminated against lately, Lee? Are you a man of that ilk?
I would say there's two big communities that I belong to. One is the squatter community. That's how I live when I'm here in Santa Cruz. I'm a squatter, not an urban squatter, what I would call a wilderness squatter. And the second big community that I feel like I belong to is sort of the hobo slash tramp community, which are people that are out on the rails. And I kind of more or less divide my time equally between those two communities. Maybe half the year here in Santa Cruz and half the year out on the rails. Both communities are, what would you say, fringe. They're on the fringe. They include homeless people. I mean, I think, as is true about a lot of these things that we're all involved with, there's sort of an intersection of circles, you would say, or communities. I'm fascinated and interested in both. One of the reasons I do the zine about freight hopping and stories, it's mostly storytelling, that's what the zine is all about, is because I'm very fascinated and maybe even obsessed with train hopping as a community, as a thing, as a way to get around.
Well, perhaps we can talk about train hopping to begin with. I mean, is this, you want to start train hopping 101? Tell us how does a completely inexperienced novice approach this? You just sort of stand by the tracks down the road and wait till the thing slows down, look for a car to jump into? What's the story?
Well, there's a lot of things to know. Primarily, the main thing that I always try to really turn people on to, and I do ride with a lot of first-timers, And in fact, some of us do the local train fairly often, which is a fun little train that starts out in Salinas in the morning, early in the morning, and comes up through Watsonville and through the southern part of the county. Santa Cruz County here comes up through Santa Cruz town itself. In fact, if anybody's within half a mile of the tracks, they probably hear it when it comes through three times a week, and eventually ends up at the end of the line, which is up in Davenport. They're carrying coal up to the Davenport cement plant to fire the plant, and then they bring concrete back, and they end up in the evening back in Salinas. It's a very slow train. It's easy to hop. I think it's really great for first-timers to practice their safety stuff. Safety is primary. If you miss the train, it's no big deal. If you miss getting on the train and you slip under and get your legs cut off, that is a big deal. So I'm always trying to kind of push the safety stuff. That's first. You kind of learn the other stuff as you go. I head out onto what I call the big rails pretty often with first-timers, and I find that within the first 500 miles, 1,000 miles, couple of thousand miles, most first-timers are picking up most of the stuff they need to know and can have a safe, enjoyable, and when possible, bust-free trip. There are railroad cops out there making sure that, number one, people don't break into trains themselves, which is like thievery, vandalism, that kind of stuff, and number two, they're there to make sure people don't ride on trains. And one of the one of the fun, playful jobs you will have if you do much hoboing, is avoiding railroad cops.
What's the last experience you had with a railway cop? And you want to give us some ideas, is there much, if we were, say, novices beginning on the Salinas-Davenport train, we'll be likely to run into these folks?
Probably not. Probably your biggest problem on the local train would be local cops. And strangely enough, local cops, sheriffs, city cops, whatever you, and this is true out on the big rails too, this isn't necessarily just our local train here, sometimes overreact a lot more against people on the trains than your average railroad cop. The old lingo, the old hobo lingo for that is a bull. A bull is a railroad cop. Strangely enough, city cops seem to overreact to it, not always, but sometimes if they see you and they can manage to stop the train and pull you off, it can be a little worse. I've had that experience out on the big rails. What was your other question?
The other question was, in fact, when does this last happen to you?
It's funny, that's a very funny question to ask me, because I have just did a freight trip out to Arizona and back through some extremely hot yards, hot meaning they're watched a lot, and you have to hide well to make it through and whatnot. My last experience, which on that trip I had no run-ins with rail cops, and I was hopping with some other people, including some first-timers. We had really great luck. We had a good time on that trip, mostly fast trains, pretty much good luck. We didn't have any really long waits, and we got busted zero times on that trip. But my last bust was this last summer up in Oregon. I got thrown in jail for riding the rails, and it's an interesting experience for me because in 12 years of riding, probably on the average around 10,000 miles a year, which is about 120,000 miles now of rail riding.
Of time are you on a train if you do that?
If you're on the train full time, meaning on a regular.
Well, you. How much?
Oh God, I couldn't even begin to guess at that. I guess I've never thought about the math on that.
A day a week, two or three days.
I would say, God, that's a hard thing. I probably, if I had to average those miles up, I would say on a good day you probably do about 250 miles a day. So do the math, 120,000 miles, 250 miles a day. Months and months of my life have been spent out on the rails. A big part of rail hopping is waiting in the freight yards, kind of the stuff that surrounds actually riding the trains also. And that's part of the fun, too. There's other aspects to rail riding besides just being on the train. But anyway, what was unusual about my last encounter with a railroad bull this summer in Oregon was that that's my first time for going to jail for freight hopping. And
they finally got you, man.
Right. Well, I've had many, many encounters over the years. I've probably had as many as 80 encounters over the years with railroad cops, and the normal thing is for them to kick you off the train, kick you out of the rail yard,
Partly because they know you're pretty much going to come back, and if they throw you in jail, you're going to come back. So there's not really a lot to be accomplished by throwing hobos and tramps in jail, especially hardened hobos and tramps, people that are doing it all they're kind of the lowest class of society out on the rails there, and they're not going to do anything but come back to the rail yard and hop out. I got thrown in with a few friends when we were riding a train coming down the West Coast and in Oregon and thrown in the clink, and that was my first time, like I say, in 12 years. Certainly not my first time in jail. I've been in jail many times, but it was my first time for rail hopping to go to jail. So it was kind of a gnarly experience, but a good experience, and we were very hungry. I'd been on the rails for weeks prior to that, was completely out of money, out of food stamps. We had been dumpster diving. We were really hungry, and coincidentally, we got thrown into jail during lunch hour. We weren't in there long. They put us in there, booked us, and then released us, and they brought us some warm, steaming chili. It wasn't vegetarian.
It's a welfare program
right.
for you bums, man. Come on.
We were stoked. We got to eat.
Oh, boy. So what are the perils on the road? I mean, I've seen the King of the North. King of the North Pole, you remember that?
Emperor of the Road.
Emperor of the North. Emperor of the North Pole was originally released, then became Emperor of the North.
Is Yul Brynner the bull in it or something?
Bull was Ernest Borgnine, and of course the hero was Carradine, and he was the bad tramp. They had the bad tramp, and then Lee Marvin was the good tramp.
The good tramp, right?
And they had this bull beating the shit out of everybody around. You know, at least who came onto his train. This was in the 30s. This took place. Happen a lot?
That's not completely Hollywood. It did happen a lot. In fact, it was fairly common for railroad cops and even occasionally railroad workers back then to hassle freight riders, and that included beating. It wasn't unusual for, I have read quite a few accounts of attempted murder on the rails where hobos and tramps were almost killed by bulls that were trying to kill them, basically. Woody Guthrie has an account in his autobiography, Bound for Glory, which is an awesome book. I highly recommend reading that book. Very good story of Woody Guthrie's life, a hardcore activist as well as a train rider, of an account where he was doing, which is common on the road, to you meet somebody on the trains or whatever, you're riding along on a train, you make friends with people out on the trains. He was riding along with this guy. I think they were up riding on the roof of some boxcars, or maybe it was a passenger train. In the old days, a lot of hobos would ride up on the roofs of the passenger trains. Anyway, he was riding up there. Assume it was a freight train. One of the bulls in one of the towns they were going through, one of the railroad cops, just took out his pistol and shot the guy off the train. And, you know, the train was moving really, really fast. Woody Guthrie wasn't able to get off. Probably wasn't a good idea to get off. And he never saw the guy again. The guy was probably killed, if not from the being shot. He was killed falling off of a freight train.
Is that a 1990s concern as well?
No, it's much rarer. In some ways, we live in a more civilized world than it was back in the turn of the century, the 10s, teens, 20s, and 30s, when a lot of that was going on, even into the 40s maybe. It's much rarer to be hassled. I mean, I know of very, very few stories in recent decades of anybody being beaten or hurt in any way by railroad bulls. I suppose it may still go on a little bit.
No friends of yours ever had that experience?
I myself had a nasty experience with some Southern Pacific rail cops in L.A. one time. And again, I would say this is really rare. I'm talking about one encounter out of 80 that I myself, you know, it's an estimated 80 encounters over the 12 years I've been riding. Where some rail cops, came pretty close to beating us up. They basically sort of attacked us with their dog, and I thought we were in big trouble. I thought we were either going to end up in jail, which almost would have been better, or that we were going to get beat up in that experience. For some reason, they backed off at a certain point, and there's not much we could do. They had the guns and the dog, and we came out of it okay, not really getting beat up, but I thought we were going that direction. I would say, again, in 12 years of riding, that was my worst experience. There also are some bad types out there on the rails, like anything.
I was about to ask about violence from other people.
Hitchhiking, going anywhere in rough parts of any city in the world or the U.S. or anything, rail riding, all these things, there are a few bad characters out there. I think that danger
gets emphasized a lot more in people's minds. I think there's kind of a vilification and demonization of
it's also kind of a romanticization, too.
Right.
Makes it more interesting.
Right, and it's probably in the freight company's better interest to keep that alive as a thing, right? It's really nasty, and there's been a lot of media lately about a freight hopping gang out there called the FTRA, Freight Train Riders of America. And I would say it's probably completely impossible, unless you're an insider to that gang, to really know what the full picture is. But I feel like I've got somewhat of a handle on the picture, knowing a lot of FTRAs, having ridden with FTRAs. Is basically they're mostly a lot of middle-aged to old tramps. There's some young ones. Young ones might be better to steer clear of than the older ones. Most of them are nice guys. Very few women in that gang. Most of them are veterans of one kind or another, a lot of them Vietnam veterans, often alcoholic, but good-hearted people. They ride a lot. Is there some murders and rapists and tortures in that gang? Yeah, I think there probably are. I have never known any. I think there are a few. It seems like this latest media hype about the FTRA, and it's national media hype. I've seen it in dozens of different newspaper clippings that people have sent to me, because I do the zine and stuff, about this gang, and it appears to be 95% bullshit. And it's a big thing right now. We need somebody to demonize, right? And you're not unfamiliar with that in terms of homeless people,
right,
and other fringe groups, you know? And that's a little bit of what's going on. There's way too much to tell in a few minutes about that gang and some of the stuff going on.
Does your fanzine have accounts by folks who've ridden the rails as members of that group, or?
Actually, this is kind of funny. I for the last three summers, I've been going out to Britt, Iowa for the National Hobo Convention. It's been running since 1900. It's in its 97th year this year. The guy, there's this very kind of corny thing where they elect a hobo queen and a hobo king every year, and a lot of times the hobo kings and queens are real rail riders, and they tend to be charismatic people. They give a little speech, and there's this whole election, and they're crowned with a coffee can crown at the end.
They wear bathing suits, with little H's on them, or whatever.
Right. It's funny. I highly recommend for anybody to go to Britt, Iowa. It's in northern Iowa, second weekend of August. If you're anywhere 1,000 miles of there, go there. It's fun. It's
hop
a little
a train and get over there.
Yeah, it's a little slice of Americana. It's a little slice of. It's also a little slice of hobodom. Are all the hobos and tramps in the country there? Hell no. There's maybe 80 people there that have ridden. And there's maybe another 100 people there that are kind of hobo fans. Thousands of tourists show up. But anyway, to make a long story short.
Great panhandling prospect.
Right. Yeah, Britt's a great place that week for panhandling. To make a long story a little bit longer, the king of that was elected this last year, who's a friend, his name's Frog, is an FTRA. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the good people of Britt know that, but here's this reputed, horrible gang of murderers.
Does he wear gang colors as well?
Right. Gang colors. It's probably Diesel Dust Gray would be that gang color.
There you go. So, but he isn't writing a piece challenging this attack on FTRA. You haven't really gotten anybody who's done an analysis of that for your zine? And by the way, where do we get your zine?
My address is P.O. Box 2497, Santa Cruz, and the zip is 95063.
Now let everybody run and get their pencils, and we'll give you that address again to get Hobos from Hell, the fanzine that got a lot of good stuff in it. I hope you have your copy, because I've got mine stashed in storage.
Thanks, Robert. Yeah, I brought a copy in with me tonight, but so there's a lot there. There's politics going on. You ask, has anybody written anything? I'm eager for people to kind of... There is a lot going on that I would basically call, for lack of a better word right now, hobo-tramp politics about, strangely enough, not so much revolving around the FTRA, but revolving around what I would call the newer generation of freight riders, which are, for, again, lack of a better label, sort of the anarchist punk riders, which are mostly the kind type of folks that I ride with, activists, punks, anarchists, younger types. And, in fact, I'm middle-aged. I'm 43, and virtually everybody I ride with is half my age or younger. There's a lot of controversy surrounding that, because we're talking about a generation and even if you want to call it a movement, if you want to talk about punks or anarchists or activists who have different values than a lot of the old-timers, different lifestyles somewhat. Some of the stuff is similar. That certainly the freight riding aspect is something that's held in common through all the generation of hobos. I mean, this started, the first hobos were right after the Civil War, and they were basically disenfranchised Civil War veterans who were displaced, had nothing to go back to, who had wanderlust, who knows what the reasons were, who hit the rails after the Civil War. There was already a pretty extensive train system throughout the U.S. at that time, or certainly throughout the East and parts of the Midwest. And there's we're talking about 140 years of rail riding, of hoboing, of tramping, and that's been going on, and each generation kind of passes it off to the next generation. Some things change, the technology changes, some of the lingo changes, but it's still a thing. You still jump on those trains.
What are these issues that the generations have now? What you say that's politics? What does that mean? You don't have delegates voting.
Right. Well, the politics are mostly revolving around the hobo gatherings that happen, Brit being one of the main ones, although there's many throughout the country. I know it sounds really obscure and funny and weird, but there are hobo gatherings.
When's the next one?
The next big one that I know of is Brit. I've only been going to Brit. If I go this next summer, it'll be my fourth summer there. I just did go to my first non-Brit hobo gathering, and it was in Arizona. And it was mostly a bunch of redneck rail fans who were very friendly to us. There was only three or four of us, what I would call like punk riders there. They were very friendly. We had a good time in the desert. But Brit's the kind of the biggie, although there's other ones. There's ones that really concentrate on hobo tramp music, where a lot of people come. And Brit's fun that way, too. A lot of people come and sing songs and do poetry and that kind of stuff. The politics, basically, to answer your question, are... have a lot to do with the lifestyles of the younger generation. They're seen as dirty. A lot of the punks are dirty, seen as dirty, kind of scruff muffin, ragamuffin types.
Like intravenous drug usage concerns, heroin use.
There's some of that's about, you know, again, a lot of the old time hobos are smoking their roll your owns, and they're sitting there.
Juice heads.
Right. They're drinking a lot. That's a common thing out on the rails. You see a lot of alcoholism, a lot of drinking. And who's going to turn up their nose to a big pot of hobo coffee in the morning, right? Coffee pot boiling constantly at Brit.
What is hobo coffee?
Hobo coffee? Well, it's the same as cowboy coffee, which is the same as Indian coffee.
I see.
you don't get all the fancy stuff with hobo coffee, but the punch is there. The punch is there.
I see.
But drug usage, looks, how people look. You know, I mean, some of the people showing up at Brit have bones through their noses. You know, this is kind of the patched. A lot of them are the patched crowd. For, you know, if you want to use labels, the crusty punks. Not really so much the punk rocker crowd, more as the crusty punk crowd that show up at Brit, who ride a lot. They're also squatters. A lot of them are hardcore urban squatters. Some of them are political activists. I mean, it's a mixed bunch. But anyway, the punk crowd, the young people crowd, and a lot of the old timers are very welcoming and very accepting and extending that hand. Some people are having a real problem.
How do women do in this world?
One of the things, I would even say one of the goals of my zine is to really encourage women to ride. I learned how to ride from a woman. She's an old lover of mine who had ridden with two other women when they'd gotten stuck hitchhiking in Montana many years ago. We're talking, I don't know how many years ago, but, and she had some good experiences, a lot less frustrating than hitchhiking, with her and these two other women riding, and many years ago, 12 years ago, Becky had turned me on to the idea of it as a way to get around, an efficient way to get around, and I found, I've had good luck over the years with rail riding with women. I've had a lot of lovers with me head out on the rails and become hobos in their own right. I've been on a lot of journeys that were fairly gender balanced. I've been on many journeys where there was as many women. I've hopped with as many as 17 people before on a single trip. I've been on a lot of journeys where there were as many women as men on the trip. I think the younger generations are getting much better about that. Generally speaking, traditionally hoboing has been a very gender unbalanced gender-wise. I would say out even to this day on the rails, excluding the younger generation, if you look, you'll see maybe 1 in 20 tramps or hobos as a woman. With younger people, it's getting better. It's much better. I think this is the punks and younger writers basically have less hang-ups, some of those old sexist hang-ups about discouraging women to go out and do adventurous, semi-dangerous things.
Mm-hmm. Give us your address again for those of you who want to get a real glimpse of what a lot of different folks who ride the rails say about it. It's really a great fanzine.
The name of the project, I guess you would call it, is Hobos from Hell, and my address is P.O. Box 2497, and that's Santa Cruz. And the zip, my zip is over on the east side, 95063.
And if any of you miss that, you can give a call after the show to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I take messages, commentary on the show, did you like it, didn't you, questions, maybe you missed a phone number. Again, give a call to 423-HUFF. After the show, leave a message, and I'll get back to you with any of the phone numbers and addresses you may have missed. You are tuned, of course, to Free Radio in Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our studio line is open. We have a rare opportunity, or you do, if you want to call in to ask some questions to a man who has been on the rails, who can give you some advice, some thoughts, encouragement, who knows, maybe some discouragement, I don't know. The phone number is 423-5361. That's 423-5361 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'd like to also put in a plug right now for a benefit. Free Radio had a benefit recently and did pretty well, but we need more and more. I mean, we are moving, as you probably know. My show will not be broadcast on Sunday. Usually I'm on from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon, but I won't be because the station will be in transit. So the next edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, that's the name of my show, will be a week from today, 6 o'clock on Thursday. But that doesn't mean you can't meet some of the folks from Free Radio Santa Cruz and come to Animal Farm. We're having show Saturday, January 31st, benefiting Free Radio, and also Sunday, February 1st, benefiting the Animal Farm Collective, and that's Melissa Benales, Manuel Schwab, Shoshana, Jeanette Aguilar, Dee Jones, Cameron, Luke Janelia, Kiyoshi, and Christian, and I apologize for any mispronunciations there, at What Is Art, both days, 7:30 on Saturday, 7:30 on Sunday, 2044 North Pacific Avenue, information 458-9508, if you want to give a call in there. But we need you at that benefit. So show up on Saturday at 7:30. I'm not quite sure what the price is. It says, doesn't say what the price is. Negotiate a price, you know. Maybe you can talk your way in, meet some good people there, and help some good people continue the kind of free radio that gives you people like Lee and like me on the air. Lee and me, what more could you want? Yeah. Let's take a musical break, give Lee a chance maybe to have a sip of coffee, give you a chance to call in at 423-5361. We're going to be talking about the Happy John Dine case, which, as you know, reached city council, perhaps you don't, on Tuesday, and got the official white swath or whitewash of approval from the city council. We'll be talking about that. We have good news on the sleeping ban initiative, which we've been mentioning regularly, but you haven't seen hide nor hair of yet, but now you will. And more. So stay tuned and give us a call at 423-5361.
Be angry, no one loves you, Susie, when you're being moody, when you're being wild. Who would want to marry someone who's so surly? I don't know what will become of such a child. Susie bites policemen. If she can, she will select a sergeant or a chief inspector. Oh, she's choosing. They all know Susie. Down at the station, when they hear she's on the prowl, there's consternation, because they know that when Susie sinks her teeth into their uniforms and flesh, she won't let go. She won't let go, 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 she won't let go. It's as if it is her mission to bite policemen. It's not so much the wounds the coppers mind as the affront to their position.
And that was the other end of that very long song by Leon Russellson, the English singer and satirist. He's a good singer. I like his companion Roy Bailey even better, but that's just personal choice. A lot of good lyrics. Well, you're still tuned to Free Radio 96.3. I'm still Robert Norse, I believe that's my name, yes. Or Bathrobes Pierre, as I call myself, because of the bizarre-looking, rather tattered bathrobe I wear in demonstrations involving the right of homeless people to sleep at night, which is a problem we have in every city in this country, pretty much. Although not in Eugene so much, if you have a car, because as you may know, in Eugene, Oregon, it is now legal. City Council passed it after pressure from a coalition of civil rights workers and homeless people up there. So it's now legal for people to sleep in their vehicles in industrial districts. So Eugene took a civilized response, not really adequate, but certainly a first step towards dealing with the realities of the cold, the wet, the need to sleep at night without being harassed. And we need to do the same. But of course, we haven't, because we have a city council that likes to think of itself as progressive, but is actually far from that thing here in Santa Cruz. They showed their colors and their feathers again at the Tuesday council meeting, and I'm going to be talking more about that. Sounds like somebody's being slaughtered outside. We'll look at that into that in a moment. But you know, we have here not only an expert, a man who's had experience with riding trains, which I've never done, and I probably should do. As soon as your leg gets better, you can coach me, man. But also, a man who knows a lot about living outside. And in the Santa Cruz area, that's how 500 to 1,500 people survive in the city and thousands more in the surrounding county. And Lee, do you have any kind of general comments about what's going on up out there in the woods surviving in Santa Cruz County?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I can talk a lot about the overall picture. I just, you know, like anyone, know my own experiences and the experiences of people I know. I've been living outside for about the same amount of time I've been freight hopping, a dozen years now. It's an interesting scene. I mean, I think it's a good way to live. It's rent-free. We're a high rent county, very high rent. It's a hard place to live. For a variety of reasons, have chosen to live this way. I really enjoy it. I think people sometimes show some pity when they hear you live outside or whatever. I really enjoy living out in nature around the animals and whatnot.
I try to use the phrase squatter, in this case, like a wilderness squatter, as opposed to, say, an urban squatter. Uh-huh. Two different scenes, similar scenes in some ways and very different scenes in other ways. Yeah, it's a thing. I mean, it's as illegal to squat in the wilderness as it is to sleep on the streets in Santa Cruz.
But more comfortable.
It can be. It can be. Yeah, I mean, you'll see it in squatter communities anywhere in the world, wilderness squatter communities, as well as in the Santa Cruz Mountains where people squat, everything from people living in little hovels made out of dome tents to more elaborate structures, tree houses, domes, shacks, whatever. It's been a well-known thing over the years that people do squat in the forest in these mountains. It's been going on for a long time. It's going on. I like living that way myself.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been one of these squatters?
I've been doing it about a dozen years now. Same as being a freight hopper.
Are you a litter bug? And we hear you squatters are just ruining the forest. You're leaving trash, feces, and urine all over the place.
Well, sad to say, some of that does go on. it's been my experience, especially somebody who really loves nature a lot and feels very concerned about being low impact as a wilderness squatter. Let's face it, we live on a on a planet where wilderness is becoming smaller and smaller every day, and human population is doubling every 40 years. It's doubled in my lifetime from about 3 billion to 6 billion. There's more and more of us scrambling for thinner slices of the pie. In this case, the pie being just a little place we can plant ourselves and call home. Yeah, there's some real slobs out there. It's a mixed bag, like any crowd. You ask me what people are like on the freight trains, I'd say most of the people are probably pretty good people. They want to be left alone. There's some bad eggs out there on the trains. What's it like in the forest? The sad part of I think is that what the perception of a lot of people see is if you've been a very neat camper, so to speak, or if you live in a structure that you've built yourself that's neat and low impact, and well done, well built, nobody's ever going to know about it. Or if they do stumble on it, they'll see, oh, this is kind of cool. Hobbits live here. What happens, what I see in my hikes around and what I've seen in the forest over the years being here is that people that are trashy, that stuff's around for a long time. And it turns people off. You know, if you're a mushroom hunter or you're a bio person, you're out there bird watching, you're a birder, you're a hiker, you're out there doing restoration work, which is something that needs to be done a lot in this county, as is in a lot of places, and you come across a place where there's mildewing clothes and 40 wine bottles laying around, half of them broken, and an old tape player that's been mildewing for the last 5 years, and you name it, all that crap. It's bad in this world. There's a lot of parking lots going up. There's a lot of growth happening in this county. There's a lot of clear cutting, or even selective cutting, for that matter, that's really obnoxious in this county. And ad infinitum, I think mountain bikers, off-road mountain bikers, are having a bigger impact on the wilderness than illegal campers, quote-unquote, in the forests and wildernesses in this area. But it is a problem. It's something that I always try to really turn on other people, like, hey, be responsible. And that can mean a lot of different things, and I've learned some of those painfully myself. It can be something as simple as not being a litter bug, trashy person out in the woods and carrying all out your crap, as well as knowing how to do proper composting with your food scraps, composting your waste, urine and shit and whatnot. I use a shit bucket myself and sawdust and kind of a little homemade composting toilet, to being very careful of the wildlife out there. We've got to remember that we share these wild areas with the wild animals, who are also a very fringe group and becoming less and less in our world, and for that matter being very persecuted. We do have an impact on wildlife out in the forest. It's important to realize, I think very important to realize, that we need to live in harmony with them as well.
Yeah, you know, I've often felt that they're teaching the wrong things in elementary schools. They should be teaching things like medicine, law, or at least how to deal with the police and how to do elementary legal rights protections, and such things as urban survival, camping. What do you do? How do you respect the area you're in at the same time be able to survive in it, not necessarily as a, you know, some sort of post-Armageddon survivalist, but as someone who's going to be confronted with the problem of paying rent in an area where you have to pay, you know, half your income for rent. It seems like we got the priorities screwed in terms of what we're teaching children. Instead, we're going through name the capitals of the states and all these utter irrelevancies, and learn the details of a political process in a format which really says nothing about what the real political process is, but talks about some ideal that is actually nothing to do with how money really decides elections, things of that sort. Sort of just a comment, but regarding a pet issue of mine, and one that I mentioned earlier in the show, is the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban and our own initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, which, as I said, is now coming to a neighborhood corner or campsite near you. It's a petition that asks that the sleeping sections of the camping ban be repealed, meaning it will no longer be illegal within the city to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night, as it currently is. Right now, if you fall asleep after 11 until 8:30 in the morning, you're subject to a $162 infraction ticket. Do it twice within 48 hours, and you can get a misdemeanor ticket, punishable by up to 6 months in jail. So I'm going to go into this in greater detail, but What would be the impact of having sleeping decriminalized in Santa Cruz? I think it would cause all those urban campers to come rushing down to sleep in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. What do you think? What would happen there?
Good question. I guess I don't feel all that in touch with what the downtown homeless scene is all that much. I'm not fond of civilization. I try to spend as little time as possible in civilized settings mostly. Probably not. I mean, in my opinion, decriminalizing, in this case, sleeping and camping out is
as logical as decriminalizing a pot or decriminalizing consensual sex.
Caller, hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, caller.
Well, hi, Robert.
Hi. Let me give my guest here the option to hear what you're saying.
I just wanted to respond to one thing that you said, Mr. Norris. You said that money buys elections.
I would say in this country it certainly takes money to win elections.
Now, doesn't it take votes to win elections?
Definitely.
All right. Now, money might be good for packaging and promotion and stuff like that, smoke and mirrors, but it doesn't win elections. And I think this is a crucial point. If people want to use that as a way to deny their citizenship reality, in a democracy, I'm certain that it'll work, but the fact is you can throw $1 million at an idiot or an idiot campaign issue, and it's still up to the individual to discern.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we deny our individual participatory role in this citizenship,
your work with the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, but I'm talking actually not so much about initiatives undertaken by citizen action. I'm talking about the usual biannual, every 4 years, vote for Tweedledee or Tweedledum.
Well, look at it, just like what you said. Look at what we got. We have fundraising, speechwriting, and pollsters. That's what politics has become. That's what Bill Clinton is. That's what the Democrats are. That's what the Republicans are. Is that what we want? Now, in some sense, apparently it is, because that way we can blame the government, we can blame money, we can blame everybody, and we're not accountable for anything. I think, to me, this is one of the crucial issues of our time.
Oh, I think...
To what degree do you want to be hoodwinked? If you want to be hoodwinked, then you will be.
Well, I also think that, I don't think it's as simple as that. I think that a lot of people have to spend a lot of time surviving, and in so doing, they don't, it's hard to make the time or find the way to get together to make the changes that need to be made. And also in our society, mistrust is a major phenomenon which rules. And the arenas in which we come together to trust each other are often those that are manufactured, kind of a form of manufactured consent, use a phrase somebody else has used, in which you're not in a real position to exercise power effectively. Although I think the place to begin is, for example, with radio stations like this, is with initiatives at the community level. It's through the kind of understanding of your power as a citizen.
As long as people don't have the time. Okay, I don't have the time, all this stuff. We're lucky that things are not worse, because all that stuff does is it tend towards money buying elections. It tends towards more authoritarianism. It tends towards more legalese and insincerity in politicians.
I agree with that.
It is extremely insincere. Let me just get one last thing and then get off the air.
Unless you want to have a response from Lee, our guest.
Sure, and then I'll just say one last thing and get off the air.
Okay,
go ahead,
Lee. Why don't you any thoughts on this?
I agree with both of you. I mean, it is complex stuff. How do you put it all in a nutshell? I'm an anarchist. I'm actually really down on voting. I don't vote, and I usually like to tell people why I don't. I guess I really don't have any hope for the political system in this country, and I because of that, probably really don't have any real solutions to offer for it. I feel like I know what's wrong, but again, they're very huge, giant, interwoven problems that I don't feel like I can really correct, and I don't feel like we're correcting it as in the activist community very well. I mean, there's a small minority of us attempting to do what we can, and I think probably locally is probably the voting locally is probably maybe the best argument for voting, period, but...
So any comment on that, Bob?
Well, Mr. Lee there, or Lee being an anarchist to me, is you couldn't be an anarchist, Lee, in a lot of other places, right? You have the ability to be an anarchist because you live in a country that has developed a sense of respect for those that even don't want to participate when they're given the opportunity. Now, I'll say this to Lee. In my opinion, Lee, and forgive me for saying this, you do not want to participate because you don't want to be held accountable for your imperfection.
Well, what I would say is that I participate in other ways. I've been politically active for a long time now.
What do you suggest replacing the vote with, Lee?
Direct action, for one.
Oh, direct action, we'll have the vanguard dictatorship of the proletariat call the shots. Is that how you want it, Lee?
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying by that. I've been involved with, in the past mostly, not currently doing this much, but I've done a lot of civil disobedience in the past and been to jail over 20 times for doing CD, acting out my beliefs in demonstrations and stuff. Again, like I say, I don't have a lot of hope, and I don't look back necessarily on my times in jail or my involvement in demonstrations, direct action, and whatnot, as the end-all and be-all, but I felt strongly about those things at that time. I still do. There's other kinds of direct action also. I'm not limiting it to civil disobedience, and I'm certainly not criticizing what you're saying at all.
I want to just, maybe other callers will call in, but direct action and civil disobedience, if it's fruitful, it produces law. It produces changes in law. We're back to working with the system. The system that we have is actually quite good. The problem is, in my opinion, that people will choose willful ignorance, they'll choose disempowerment over accountability. Last thing I want to say is the Pacific Avenue Pedestrian Mall petition drive ends February 10th.
How's it going, Bob?
I think it looks favorable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. February 10th is the end. This is the chance to get a very popular Santa Cruz issue on the ballot as an advisory measure.
And how can people do that?
Anyone that hasn't signed it can connect with the hub, which is just north of the town clock. Or there will generally be someone, might even be myself, at the corner of Church and Pacific downtown most afternoons. Also up at the college, up at UC, at Kresge Food Co-op. It's available at the Bike Co-op.
Do you have a phone number, Bob? People can call if they want to get in touch.
Yeah, let me give you the number for PEDEX. That's a good drop number. And I'll give my number, too. Peddlers Express is 426-2453.
426-2453.
Now, the petitions are always available at the hub, which is 2048
North Pacific. 2048
North Pacific. Anybody that wants to get involved in the last push for the petition drive, this has been a very fun issue to work with, by the way. Very, very Santa Cruz. My number is 457-2670.
457-2670,
Okay.
Bob.
You can count on it at the next farmer's market, too.
Hey, if you don't get rained out there, Bob.
You bet.
Keep up the good work, Bob.
It's been a lot of fun to work with this issue. It looks favorable. It's very Santa Cruz. It'll be a nice way to bring out a lot of issues as a ballot measure. Okay, I think a lot of good stuff will come out of this issue.
Thank you,
I've had
Bob.
A good deal of fun working with it, and it is very empowering to attempt as best we can to work with the processes that we have. Thank you for letting me get on the air.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right.
Bye, Bob.
Bye.
Oh, boy. That's a whole can of worms there, huh?
Yep.
I struggle. I don't know if struggle's the right word, but I feel like that subject comes up a lot with activists and activist circles, I notice. I always like to kind of think of it as being hopeful, or however much hopelessness you have in the system. And one of the things I'm noticing is like Bob is doing this thing that he's very fervent about. He's putting a lot of time and energy in, and here's me that comes on the air and says a kind of a glib remark about not voting, which is something I believe in and whatnot. And I think that a lot of times you feel when you're really putting yourself into something, and people are doing something different, it feels like they're distracting from what you're doing, they're taking away or whatnot. I used to do a lot of animal rights activism. I still feel strongly about it. I don't do any activism about it, but and people would, you know, I'd be tabling, or I'd be hanging a banner, or doing something, you know, and invariably, not invariably, but a lot of times people would come by and say, what about the humans? And you know, I'd always be like, well, it's not an either-or situation. It doesn't mean I'm saying, you know, that But somehow people feel like if you're fighting for animals, you're somehow taking away from something that might benefit, well, let's do the your pet issue, homeless activism, homeless issues, fighting for laboratory animals or trying to stop habitat loss for endangered species or what you name it, something that's, say, affecting another species of, let's not disclude the plants for that matter, something that's, you know, in any of those realms, environmental realms, animal rights realms, doesn't mean that you hate humans or that you're distracting away from other human issues. And there are those times when issues do conflict with each other, and I think it's important for activists to talk about those issues and whatnot, but just when I say I don't vote, it doesn't mean I don't think Bob's doing good work or that I support what
you're doing good work, Bob. Keep that in mind. And so are you, Lee. I don't know if you're doing too much work hanging out on those trains, though. I mean, just life of Riley. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about was, what about the good times on the trains? You know, we heard about the bulls and the cops and the bad people and all that stuff, but what are the good times? What's the good side of all this?
Well, it's funny, even the bad things. I mean, one of the little joys I get with the whole cop scene is you do basically cat and mouse, and that can be a very complicated thing on the trains, hiding from rail cops in rail yards if they've seen you or following you, or you know you've been seen on cameras and you know the cops are going to be down a half mile. Even that can be fun. But the good things, there's a lot of good things. And in my zine, again, I don't write much. I really just put it together, other people's stories with graphics and photos and put the thing out there into the world. I think people really try to capture that in their stories. You know, scenery is a very obvious one. Trains go through tons of wilderness, and it's a different kind of thing than you see from the highways when you're doing a car trip, which is how the huge majority of people see America, is from the car trip. And the closest next thing to seeing it the way you see it from a freight train is
Amtrak.
And again, on Amtrak, you're looking through a scratched plexiglass window, sitting back in a plush seat. It's not the same as being out in the open air on this clanking machine. There's just some amazing thing. In fact, the name of my zine is called There's Something About a Train, and that's an old Amtrak slogan. I stole that from Amtrak for the name of my zine, and it really applies. You know, all the time people, when they're trying to kind of sum up their freight trip to me, either in a story or verbally, you know, half the time people ended up with there's something about a train. I always have to crack up because that's been the name of my zine for 8 years now. The scenery, it's just different. There are no gas and saves along the freight tracks. There are no, there's no billboards. There's none of that crap that's catering to, you know, overconsumption in America. And you see a lot of wilderness. The trains go in a lot of different places than the highways. Sometimes they parallel highways, but even when they do, they're often a mile away or whatever. But often they're really going in very different places you see from the highway, and it's just you and your friends and the train. And there's some solidarity with the crew that are driving the train, and that's really cool too, because you feel that, you know. It's like, oh, we're their only passengers, you know. And
do you ever have any contact with the crew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's quite common to interact with workers. And basically in freight yards, that's one of your few ways of finding out where trains are going, unless you know the freight yard well and you know, like, oh, yeah, the eastbound trains go out on these tracks and stuff, which is also an important thing. For me, I would say most, now having done it as long as I have, most of the western yards are somewhat familiar. I can go into a yard and know that these tracks are going. But a lot of times, especially if you're new to yards, you have to approach a worker. And the workers, one of the old hobo sort of sayings is the workers are our friends. And it's really true. They often do appreciate, and they appreciate that there are people riding their trains, as odd as that sounds. Occasionally you're going to get the company man, so to speak, who might call in the bull or whatnot. You know, not all workers are friendly, but a lot are. They don't exactly share hairbrushes with the rail cops, right? It's not the same. It's almost like a class thing a little bit. They are our friends. As long as the railroads stay unionized, as long as they stay at the big impersonal industrialized things that they are, there's probably always going to be workers out there. And in fact, in the old days, a lot of workers had been hobos. They either were hobos before they were rail workers, or they were hobos afterwards. And so there's a certain kind of, you know, cross there. I don't think that applies so much anymore.
We had the old, and I guess the residual IWW, the Wobblies, who came to town in the tens and teens and 20s, you know, through the trains to fight for basic free speech rights, rights of workers, and presumably for revolution as well. And I guess that kind of has dwindled, unfortunately, but that's certainly was big news in the first 30 years.
Yeah, it's very dwindled, unfortunately. I mean, I think you could probably count the Wobblies in the thousands at this point, but at one time there were hundreds of thousands of Wobblies, many, many of them out on the rails, and in fact,
Wobblies are IWW unionists, by the way, essentially men and women who thought, were they mostly men, or were they both men and women?
Both, but again, like a lot of things, mostly men back then.
People who, you know, felt that there should not be class distinctions, that the people who people should own the world are those who work it. And it was essentially a revolutionary union that began in about 1905 and then essentially died about the time, well, they died, the criminal syndicalist laws killed the Wobblies, I think, in the 20s, and the Communist Party took up the rest of them. But they were a huge force for a while, and they used the rails. Where are the Wobblies now? Are they wobbling now? I guess they're not there.
Well, I know a few Wobblies who ride the rails. I'm actually a Wobbly myself, although a very, very bad one. Bad, bad, bad. I haven't paid my dues in years, but... Yeah, the Wobblies are a very colorful and rich history in rail riding, as far as I'm concerned. They were doing a good thing, and as you said, there was a time in this country when we almost went a different direction. I think if the industrial workers of the world had had their way, and a lot of the, you know, socialists and whatnot that was going on back then. By the way, the Wobblies describe themselves as an anarchist union. They've been accused of being commies and whatnot over the years. If those trends that were happening back then had had their way, we could be living in a different America, one that I think would be friendlier towards workers, friendlier towards all the fringe groups that we're fighting for.
Yeah, actually, I mean, it's interesting. One looks at those turning points. If there had been a revolution in Germany after the First World War, there had been a revolution in France in 1968, if all the ifs. What we're stuck with is Free Radio Santa Cruz, however. That's the reality, 96.3 FM. You're listening to Bath Robespierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, Thursday show from 6 to 8. We won't be on next Sunday when we usually are, but we'll be on next Thursday. And this is your chance to call in and, you know, talk to two old farts who are having a gay old time here on the radio. No double entendre intended. It's 423-5361 is the call-in number for the show. We're talking to Lee, who's the editor of Hobos from Hell, a fanzine that, what, you're now in your fifth issue?
I'm just starting to work on my fifth issue now, but I'm not done yet. It's probably not going to be done until summertime.
You have back issues available?
Yeah, currently number four is available.
And for those who want, I might be able to find a number three, and at great cost, we could Xerox it for you, maybe. Again, another plug for the upcoming benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's happening this weekend, the 31st and the 1st, 7:30, at What Is Art, which is a little shop about a block past the town clock on North Pacific at 2044. And this is to help this radio station survive, and the collective that is working it survive. They are putting in lots of their own time to make sure that you get to hear things that you won't hear anywhere else. So rather than sound like a KPFA wannabe and run through a silly marathon, send us your money, still, come on to this benefit, January 31st, February 1st, Saturday and Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Well, I'm going to kind of run into some other subjects, and I'm not sure if Lee's going to hang or not. If you hang, Lee, you're welcome to, you know, jump in at any point. And, of course, callers, or all you non-callers, now's your time and your opportunity to become callers at 423-5361. I'm going to start running through some other stuff that I kind of have had on the back burner. What do we got? Well, maybe the best thing to do is to play an interview I had recently, actually just today, with Becky Johnson. Regular listeners know Becky because she's a video journalist with Club Cruise. She's a board member on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, where she's actually meeting or has been meeting through the afternoon, the Citizens Committee for the... Well, rather than even talk about it, I'll just put on this interview, and you can call in and complain it's not what you want to hear, or perhaps it is what you want to hear. It's what you're going to hear, anyway. Well, we're talking to Becky Johnson, and Becky, you've got a number of hats here. You're a board member for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which runs the only emergency shelter system in Santa Cruz County, really. You're also on the Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure, which I guess is meeting Thursday tonight at 8:30 at the Coffee Roasting Company downtown to continue investigation into the Happy John Dine case. And finally, you're on the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, which finally has apparently made its appearance as a petition. Now, which of these subjects do you want to talk about?
And you forgot my television show, Club Cruise, on Tuesday night, 7 to 7:30, Channel 71.
Which frequently features homeless topics, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess the issue that's the newest, they're all kind of hot on the burner in one way or another. We have begun our signature gathering drive to put the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban on the ballot.
Now, wait a minute. We've been hearing this for month after month. Every time we hear, we've begun. You actually have this petition for people to sign and distribute?
We had them printed up a few weeks ago. We ran into a snag and had held off on gathering signatures until we could work out the snag. We contacted the city attorney earlier this morning, and that's all cleared up. And so we have the green light to collect signatures between now and May 27th.
And how can people get copies of this petition and start either sign it or get others to sign?
Well, they could contact one of three people, myself, I'm Becky Johnson, and they could call me at 429-8529, and or come by where I live, which is 706 Frederick Street, and pick up some petitions. However, in order to circulate the petitions, the petition gatherer must be a registered voter in the city of Santa Cruz. So bear that in mind. Also, David Silva has copies of petitions, and in the downtown location, Charlie Phillips. Charlie Phillips' number is 454-9933 for people who want to contact him in the downtown location.
Now, this petition, as I understand it, it makes it legal for people to sleep in the city except in areas the city council designates as not sleeping areas. How does this differ from the current situation?
Well, the current law makes it illegal to sleep anywhere, virtually anywhere, in the city of Santa Cruz between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. It also makes it illegal to cover up with blankets during those hours as well. That would be eliminated from our version. However, camping would still be illegal.
What would camping be as distinguished from sleeping?
Camping is setting up a tent, a hammock, cooking facilities, setting up a permanent a campsite with the intention of spending the night. So those two elements have to be satisfied in order for a camping ticket.
So a police officer finding someone with a sleeping bag, say, parked outside City Hall, could no longer arrest that person for sleeping?
That's correct. Under our initiative, merely sleeping or covering up with blankets or protective covering, which could include, say, a sheet of plastic to keep a person dry, God forbid, those would be considered legal as long as the person is not trespassing or committing some other crime.
Well, are you saying that, isn't this kind of a slap in the face of the homeless? Aren't you suggesting that, this is what you want to do for homeless, make it legal for them to live in a kind of a wretchedly sleep in the streets? Is this any solution to the homeless problem?
It is no solution to the homeless problem, but it is a mitigation of some of the suffering and the persecution that homeless people currently experience in the city of Santa Cruz and elsewhere, I might add.
Now, what about the homeless people who say to you, hey, that's fine, but if you can't have a tent for protection or you can't have a stove for warmth, what's the point of this initiative?
Well, I think from a homeless person's point of view, I'm sure they would prefer we go further and eliminate the camping ban entirely. I don't think that would pass with the voters, and that was part of the reason that we came with this, what I would call, compromise initiative. However, it does provide real relief to homeless people who for a single act of sleeping could get a $162 fine, which is prohibitively expensive to a homeless person and puts them into the criminal justice system, which just adds to their woes. Another aspect of this is that the legalizing of sleeping in vehicles, this is perhaps the most controversial aspect of our initiative. However, I think people should realize that under state law, if you're driving your vehicle and you become too exhausted to drive your vehicle safely, you are allowed to pull over at the side of the road and rest, perhaps even sleep for up to 2 hours anyway.
What state law is that?
I was under the impression that was a California state law, but perhaps you differ with me on that?
No, I'm not aware of any such state law. I am aware that it is illegal to do that in Santa Cruz or in Capitola, and it may be illegal in Scotts Valley, but it's not illegal in the county because of a specific provision.
No, I'm talking about the roadside resting exemption.
That's a county provision in this county. That is, you're allowed to sleep for several hours by the side of the road, thanks to Supervisor Gary Patton and the Board of Supervisors in the mid-80s.
Oh, that's a county rule.
That's correct, as far as I know.
I thought that was a statewide law. And
if it is, I don't know which one it is.
And if it's not, it should be, because that's just common sense that a person should not be operating a vehicle if they're too fatigued to operate it.
Well, there seems to be really a lot of anti-homeless persecution going on. I mean, I think elsewhere in the show today we're going to be looking over a situation where I guess listeners have heard about Patricia Gardella.
Before you go, I wanted to finish with one final comment that you made earlier about, you know, say a homeless person wrapped up in a sleeping bag sleeping at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Our initiative will not legalize anything that is not already legal between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 11 p.m. at night. And I don't see how making what is legal during the day also legal at night is going to impact the city any more negatively than...
Well, what about the claims that there will be, you know, wherever you go, I mean, one of the chief complaints of people is that campers leave a mess, and particularly certain class of people who, you know, leave not only debris, but also human feces, urine, and so forth, and just trash the area. This has been a concern of Parks and Rec employees. This has been a concern of Mayor Michael Rotkin when he was mayor last year, possibly even of Mayor Cynthia Matthews. I've never heard her talk about it. If you allow people to sleep, then they are going to do the other things necessarily that you do when you have to sleep. I mean, how can you possibly set up a living situation, permit people to live in a situation, and not expect them to do what people do in that kind of living situation?
Well, that's about four or five issues you've thrown all at once here, Robert. Littering, defecating, urinating, or creating a noise nuisance, disturbing the peace, those are already illegal under other ordinances, and there's no reason why they couldn't be enforced. Now, I've talked to
Wait a minute. You're going to ask a police officer to sit by the side of the road in a squad car waiting for some person in a sleeping bag to get up and go take a piss? I mean, come on, get real here.
I would consider that a complete waste of police time.
Well, how else are they going to enforce these ordinances? You have to wait and actually catch them in the act.
I'm afraid that if you're going to cite someone for urinating or defecating, that you're going to have some proof that they have done that, and that would follow through as with any other crime that a person